We are united. We are not playing.
We are united and not having anything to do on Saturdays now. Jeez. We're going to have to take up a new hobby. You're going to have to learn how to golf.
I know.
And hope the NFL puts on some Saturday games.
Yeah, hope the NFL gets into a bubble.
Or we get or we get the Sun Belt Channel. In all seriousness, Pac-12 shuts it down, shuts down all fall sports, including football, where they followed shortly after the Big Ten.
So that just leaves the ACC, SEC, and Big 12. But how long are they going to hold out?
Does it weigh so much on the Big 12? So we're going to have Dan Wolkin, who's a national columnist for USA Today, on with us tonight. Some 72 hours after the announcement, we've seen the windfall of everyone's opinion on why it's a bad idea, why it's a good idea, why the Big 12 may still play, ACC and SEC may still play. I'm anxious to hear his take because he sees the whole nation. We just see the Pac-12, and I think what happened, I'd love to get your opinion as we get into this, K-Win. This may hurt some people, but I think we got a little bit smarter people at the top making the decisions for us. And they're considering the health of these players before anything and everything, even before the money.
What are you trying to say? People from the SEC are from the sticks?
I'm saying if there's nothing to do on Saturdays in Arkansas, there could be a revolt.
Yeah,
it's that much implication for, I think, for a lot of these SECs.
No, but you bring a good point. The SEC has these college football programs, these storied football programs, that their whole community, their whole town, their whole livelihood is college football. And without it, the economy crumbles and there's nothing else to do.
Did you know? So 12% of all the revenue, all revenue, including kids coming to school, tuition, all that coming in at LSU, is from the football program.
Wow.
That is insane to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to your point, is there tuition hikes? Hey, no football. You got to pay more money. Or
University kids just... of Phoenix is going to start charging $200,000 just to stay
But didn't you say, you know, there's kids are going to Bama and LSU for the football programs. There's no football. Why am I going there? I'm going to go to that community college and Last Chance U.
Yeah. Well, if you're a parent, you're not paying for your kid to go to Bama. If there's no football, they're going to sit in their dorms and do nothing except waste your money.
There's frat sororities. They're just going to get drunk and get COVID. And there's going to be no football.
Yeah.
They have Big Ten fallout, Ohio State. Justin Fields, I saw something on Instagram where some guy said, picture this, Justin Fields, quarterback at Georgia this year.
That was going to be one of my questions. Could these quarterbacks transfer and get eligibility in the next 2.5 weeks and learn the playbook?
Well, if you have Justin Fields, you just put him under center.
You say, hey, Justin, what do you want to throw?
Here's a dry erasable and a whiteboard. Show us what you want to run. God, I had something for you.
Here's my question that no one has answered or I haven't read. So Justin Fields, well, let's not take Justin because he's going to the NFL regardless of what happens. A running back, second string running back, doesn't opt out. There's no football this year. Does he lose that year of eligibility?
Well, they've already said for any players that want to opt out, they get an additional year of eligibility.
No, I'm saying you don't opt out. Like, so if there's no football, you have to physically write something to say I'm opting out. I'm saying there's no football for anyone for the next 12 months.
So you're thinking like the transfer portal. Can someone opt in after two games and say, I'm not playing, I'm not seeing the field, I'm done?
Yeah.
And retain another year? I don't know. Get our intern to look through that document, see exactly the description of what has to take place in order for them to retain the eligibility. That's an interesting thought, though. Mm-hmm. Like, how many games you don't see the field? Technically, you can redshirt, right?
Yeah.
So what if you haven't burned a redshirt? Or you take a COVID and then you take a red shirt, we might see 24-year-olds playing for LSU. Who knows?
Who knows?
I don't know if you've read a lot of the feedback article I just read from the Oregon State president. And he used to be the president or went to Florida or something like that, where there's 60,000 undergrads. And there's, he's saying, you know, what do you think won out on your side? He more said, more or less said science and health. He said, why do you think Florida's still doing it? You know, it's a gamble, big gamble to bring not only all those kids back, but have the kids playing football.
Yeah.
And then you have Florida State. Can't keep it under control.
No, Norvell's not even. Wide receivers came out. One guy's like, I tested. No, I didn't. No way. I don't even know what if I'm positive or negative.
I spit in a cup and it didn't turn blue. So I'm good. College. And then you have Emmert talking about a bubble potentially.
For the spring?
Yeah. He's taking my idea. He listens.
Where is he going to put this bubble? You know how many colleges are out
regional
there?
Regional bubble.
A regional bubble.
Do a regional bubble.
By state?
Pac-12 North, Pac-12 South.
Then how do you get to a playoff game out of that?
Well, then you have the top four teams out of the five-game round robin. Top four teams go on. Seed them out of that. Top team in the South plays the second team in the North. Boom. Same thing. Cross.
But as soon as they travel outside of their bubble, that's when COVID spreads.
Nah, they gotta go through two negative tests to get on the plane.
All right.
Let's make it happen.
There's Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, what's up?
Thanks for joining the show.
Sure.
Good. Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
Good. Good.
You're busy. You're refreshing Twitter. You're a national columnist for USA Today. What's the last 72 hours been like for you since the announcement?
Well, look, I think for me, I try to spend a lot of time just checking in with people, checking in with sources. That's what a lot of us do. But I'm at home, you know, so there's not a lot else going on other than this. It's a big story. It's the story that matters the most. So you just try to follow it and react to it. And, you know, it's not that different in some ways than what I normally do, because I'm always kind of doing that when there's big news going on. But yeah, I mean, it's fairly intense right now just because things are happening pretty fast.
So earlier this week, both the Big Ten and Pac-12 decided to cancel all fall sports, which leaves the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 still shooting for playing football this fall. Do you think there's a legitimate shot that we will see football from those three conferences this fall?
I think the odds are against it. I mean, look, it may happen. The reality of the situation in the country right now, the reality of how difficult it's going to be to keep a football team on the field given the expected spike in cases on various college campuses, the contact tracing requirements, all of those things. Students are starting to come back now over the next few weeks. So we'll have, I think, some real data about what that does to a campus environment and maybe how that filters to a football team. But, you know, now Division I NCAA has canceled fall sports. So basically the only game in town is the six FBS conferences that have decided to continue trying to play. And, you know, you just start to look at it and say, is that really realistic? So that's just where we are. And I think they will eventually likely move to where the Big Ten and Pac-12 are, but they want to give it a shot.
Where do you sit with in regards to Nick Saban's remark saying, I want to play, it's for the players' sake. He values the players. He wants them to stay healthy, but he also looks at the other things about ecosystem and taking them out of that kind of contained environment.
Well, look, the reality is all of these programs are going to keep their football players on campus. They're going to continue to do the type of training they've been doing over the summer. It'll be like an off-season, extended off-season program. I mean, come on, guys. College football players these days, pre-pandemic, were on campus 11 months a year. I mean, it is a full-time, almost 365-day-a-year job. So that's what they're going to be doing. And there's not going to be games to play, and it's going to suck. And we all wish it were a different situation. But this idea that, like, they're just going to be turned out into the street and have no support from their schools is completely not true. There's always trade-offs in these decisions. I mean, this is a big, hard problem to solve because you're balancing all kinds of risks and public health considerations with playing football and the necessity of what that does to a campus and the economic engine of college football and what that means to communities. These are not easy decisions, but if you can't play, you can't play. And at least a couple of these conferences have decided they just can't play. And they're going to try to give it a shot when conditions get a little bit better and there's better testing and some other things. So I know why Saban's doing it. I mean, he's trying to fight for his guys to have a fall season. We all want that, but it's just what's realistic, you know, and as of now, I think it's not looking good.
So if it's not looking good for this fall, how do you see things kicking off next year for college football? Is it going to be spring football with all the other fall sports as well, rolling in line once everyone has a chance to play?
Yeah, I mean, people may have to really do some adjustments to what is a traditional season because, as Mark Emmert said, they want to give the priority, frankly, to the athletes and the teams that had their championships canceled from this past spring. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that they have basketball tournaments. They want to make sure they have a baseball season. They want to make sure they have the Frozen Four and hockey, all those things. So I think that's the starting point for them, and obviously football will be a huge part of that. It will certainly be a big stress on these athletic departments if that's the way it works out. Again, we don't know what is going to happen in January, February. We don't know what it's going to be like. We can hope that things are better. I do think testing will improve. Maybe there's some therapeutic advancements that improve the situation. I mean, hopefully people do what the hell they need to do to socially distance, wear masks and personal hygiene and get the numbers down, because that's really the most important thing right now. But look, it's not ideal. It's not perfect. But if it's what you have to do, if you just can't play in the fall, well, then you try to reschedule to when you can. And yes, there's trade-offs and adjustments that have to be made on the back end of that. And then you deal with those when you have to deal with those. Like, that's just the way I look at this pragmatically. And, you know, I think there's smart people who, if they're motivated, can figure out a way to make it happen.
Yeah. What's the straw that broke the camel's back in your mind, Dan? Was it accountability of the schools putting the kids out there? Was it the reports of, you know, late onset respiratory or cardiology, heart problems from kids, or
yeah,
what, look, in your mind?
I think it's all those things. The more you learn about the virus, you know, we started from zero, you know, back in February, March, and now we feel like we have a little bit of some answers, but at the same time, you know, things are always changing. Like, we thought surfaces were a big spreader of it. Now they say that's not true. You know, at first it was like, well, asymptomatic people, they're not going to have any real complications. Well, now we think that may not be true. So they have to just sort of, I think they just got to a point of looking at the data on the heart issue. You know, there is some suggestion in the research that maybe it's more prevalent in COVID, related to COVID, than other viruses. So that's a concern. Just the numbers, availability of testing, like, just all the things. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was one thing that broke the camel's back, but, you know, I just think people looked at it and said, we just don't know enough. Yeah. You know, and so let's just slow down here.
So everything seems disjointed. You know, you've got the five power conferences, the five commissioners, they each have their own medical staff. And then on top of that, the NCAA has their medical staff. Why do you think there wasn't a uniform response in terms of, yes, there's college football, or no, there's not? There's kind of this in between.
Well, college football is very fragmented. The power's all within the conferences. The college football playoff is the engine of college football. It's a conglomeration of the 10 FBS conferences, obviously with the Power Five leading that, plus Notre Dame, and they're the ones who are making the decisions. And as much as they can say and try to work in concert with each other, the reality is they all answer to their own board of trustees and presidents of those universities. And so when you have, you know, disparate groups with different priorities, and they're looking at, you know, different medical experts and you know, one conference has hired a bunch of independent experts. Mm-hmm. Pac-12 had a bunch of independent. The SEC, the ACC have a bunch of people who work at those schools, and it doesn't mean they're, you know, doesn't mean they're not, they don't know what they're talking about, or they're not, their opinions aren't medically sound, but you know, is there some house effect of that, you know? And so all those things, I think, add to the ridiculousness of the situation we're in. And then what happened is in May, when people started to feel good about the season, the priority shifted to, okay, how can we actually play as many games as possible?
Yeah.
And how can we start as early as possible? So then you just turn into this big hodgepodge of people going in different directions. And then when we realized, well, that's not a really good idea, then it's just like, you know, rats jumping off the ship. So it's a mess. College football is a big mess, and there's nobody really leading it.
Dan, we're West Coast guys. We believe in the Pac-12. We don't necessarily believe in the Pac-12 network or Larry Scott. I know you're a tennis guy too, but him coming from the WTA. Real quick, you have a national scope on things. What is the, does the Pac-12 look feeble?
I think actually in this situation, from everything I've heard, I mean, Larry Scott's had some situations on his watch that are not good, and it's very fair to question the way the conference is run in a lot of areas. But from everything I've heard, Larry Scott has handled this situation very consistently, very fairly, been very upfront with the decision makers. And, you know, it doesn't seem to me like there's really a lot of dissent in the Pac-12 about what had to happen. It feels like everyone was really on board, not just, yeah, we support what we're doing, but it's like, this is what we had to do. Like, we didn't really have a lot of options here. So I don't think the Pac-12 looks weak. I think they look smart and they look cautious. And, you know, is there a chance that we may be in 2 months in a situation where they look overly cautious? It's possible. But I also think when you're talking about, you know, real lives and real consequences for people in this a virus and a pandemic of this magnitude, I don't think you can ever look too bad being cautious.
So if you look at the Pac-12 network, you know, if there's no fans that's in the stadiums, people are going to have to watch the games on TV, which the Pac-12 is struggling with viewership. What are some of the things that you would do if you could change the way that fans could consume and watch the Pac-12, since no fans will be at stadiums for the foreseeable future?
Well, I mean, the Pac-12 network is a whole issue unto itself. And, you know, I get cable, and I've never had the Pac-12 network in HD. I've always had the Pac-12 network game on after watching standard definition. And I feel like I'm in 1988. But – you know, I think they probably could do more with the digital product, and, you know, just as something as simple as, you know, giving media members a login to the Pac-12 mm-hmm. digital, because, you know, the one thing about it is, yeah, fans, you know, you want to make it easy for them to watch, but I do think, like, you want the media to talk about you. And one way to make it easier for the media to talk about you is to put your product in front of the media easily. And I don't think they've done that very well. Obviously, the times, the kickoff times have been an issue. But also at the same time, look, the Pac-12, it's great institutions. It's a group of great institutions. But it's also a group of institutions where the fan base and the passion for college sports is not as big. I mean, people are doing other mm-hmm. things with their time often than going to college football games, whereas it's just more culturally important in other places in the country. So I don't know that the Pac-12 can ever really match other leagues in those certain metrics, but I think they could probably do a better job putting their product in front of people.
Dan, question on the players. Can we see something like Justin Fields transferring to Georgia? Is that feasible?
No. I mean, look, there's not a lot of time to make this happen. Mm-hmm. One thing. I mean, there's not a lot of room. I don't think programs have a bunch of scholarships. Now, obviously, if Justin Fields wanted to, I'm sure someone could figure out a way to get him a scholarship. But, you know, and also there's just no guarantees. I mean, you can say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to an SEC school. It's a coin flip at best that the SEC is going to play this fall. So I don't think you're going to see very many, if any, of that. It's just a crappy situation, and everyone's going to have to try to pitch in and you know, make sure these athletes are being cared for and that their mental health is being looked after and that they're motivated to try to work toward a possibility of playing in a few months.
Now, could a five-star, four-star recruit graduate high school early, enroll at USC before the end of this calendar year and be eligible for spring, the spring season?
Well, you're getting into an area with scholarship numbers and stuff like that that I don't think has all been exactly hashed out yet. I think there's certainly a likelihood that that could happen. I do think, you know, they're going to have to make some adjustments for roster size, scholarship limits and things like that. But yeah, I mean, the whole recruiting process is disrupted because of this, and you're not going to really have visits and that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, theoretically, I think that's possible, but I think a lot of the details on the stuff are still kind of in motion.
Dan, positive thinking here. You're a Vanderbilt alum. What if I said there's a football game, SEC football game in Vanderbilt? The next day we got a day game, baseball, and then basketball at night. That's been talked about. Is that feasible?
Well, I do think it will put a lot of stress on some of these schools and athletic departments just on staffing. I just as an example, I was talking to one athletic director at a group of five school, and they were like, you know, we need to have 7 athletic trainers at a football practice. We employ 9. So if you're having, you know, football practice and basketball practice and soccer practice and tennis practice and all this stuff going on at the same time, that can really, really stretch you thin. And I don't think they're going to be like hiring a bunch of new people to make that work. So I think that is a real key concern. If you have like every sport going on at once, is there going to be enough like support staff for some of this?
Now, there's been a lot of news and I haven't been able to keep up with all of it. So if the SEC or ACC play and a student athlete opts out, will they get their eligibility?
Yeah, it's basically what they're going to do is you will keep your year of eligibility if you play less than 50% of the games and you opt out at any point prior to that due to COVID anything. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a good move and it's what they had to do.
Dan, I think we're good here. We appreciate the time. Last question. How did Vanderbilt's newspaper get called the Hustler?
Well, I think it goes way back to the days of Cornelius Vanderbilt, who is the namesake of the school. Apparently that was his nickname, was the Hustler. So that's why the student newspaper is the Hustler.
Strange stuff.
And so, this is really the last question. What Pac-12 school, when it all starts up again, has the best shot to get to a BCS playoff and why?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, look, I think the obvious answer is Oregon. You know, Oregon's got a really good football team that they've been building up there. But obviously, you know, what happens with the rosters? I mean, if there is football in 4 months, it's hard to really predict what that's going to mean just for players. I mean, it's more development time, but it's also more time for key players to decide they don't want to play. Right. So it's like, how does that come out in the wash? I don't really know. But from a talent standpoint and just like complete roster standpoint, I think you have the most confidence in Oregon of anybody.
All right. Well, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you online and read about all your college football and college basketball material?
I'm pretty easy to find at usatoday.com and on Twitter at Dan Wolken.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining the show. We appreciate it, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Take care. Be safe.